they really put their focus on the co-op campaign. There's no competitive multiplayer. They really put their
right.
their baskets in, or their eggs in the co-op thing basket. Just yeah, I know. Okay.
Let's move on to news. 3, 2, 1. Dakota Republican Primary War Room. It's the Rapid Beard Growth edition of the Side Quest, episode 325. I am one of your hosts, Dally Domofsky. Joining me as usual is Eric Smith.
You know, whenever you do that, I think I've said this before, it makes it really hard to level it out with the music.
Everything's going to be okay. Steven Strom.
Steven the Wild Tangent Strom. Even broadcasting to you live from actual North Dakota, actually.
That's true. You are in actual North Dakota.
Actually.
Actually, you are in the Republican primary war room. And finally, our wonderful special guest for the evening, one Mr. Randy Nelson.
Hi. I can't be certain, but I think I'm having a stroke after that introduction.
Don't worry, one of our listeners is too.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be some litigation upcoming about this. But yeah, hey guys, thanks for having me on. Awesome to be here.
Yeah, you are coming to us from
the wild norths of the wild norths of Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, which, you know. I'm not in a Republican headquarters, but
maybe the furthest thing from Republican headquarters.
Yeah. I'm in the anti-Republican headquarters. So, that's me.
Great. Well,
to
we are,
fair, you do have a politician, an actor as a politician there, you know, so Ronald Reagan would be proud.
Yeah. There's that guy, Arnold something. Yeah, he was around for a while.
Tom Arnold.
Governor Tom Arnold. He's gonna, he's gonna show us how to, get an eagle on the economy or something. Or Tom Arnold? Oh, different Arnold. Yeah, I think Tom Arnold is the guy from The Stupids, which we were talking about before the show. Which would be fitting for California politics, but
he is also in True Lies, which also features actual Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know, we should name every Arnold possible that's not Arnold Schwarzenegger that could be governor, like Arnold from Different Strokes. Hey Arnold, yeah.
What's Arnold's last name?
Arnold Palmer?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
You could be half lemonade, half iced tea. Arnold from Green Acres.
Does it have to be a name? Could it be a place like Arnold in Nottingham?
What?
I just want to point out that Arnold from Green Acres is a pig.
Like a
hyper-intelligent pig. Right, okay. I just wanted to double-check with everybody.
I like that you mentioned hyper-intelligent pig. He's essentially... He's a Mass Effect pig is what he is.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He is the Mr. Ed of pigs.
Oh, Steven, you're such a ham. All right, let's move on to what we've been playing.
What have we been playing? Yeah, we have to talk about what we've been playing, because that's what we do every week. It's a video game podcast. Randy, why don't you start us off? What have you been playing?
I've been playing primarily titles with Adobe in the name, so like Adobe InDesign, Adobe Photoshop.
Who publishes those?
It's this little company called Adobe. You might have heard of them before.
Oh, right.
Another one I've been playing. Okay, so once we actually just wrapped production on Pixel Magazine issue 1 a couple days ago. So kind of wasn't playing any games during that time, except for the aforementioned Adobe titles. But once that was over, I felt this overwhelming need to kind of let out some like kind of pent up frustration at very long hours. So I popped in Asura's Wrath, which, as you may or may not know, is a title about anger management.
The movie, right? The Adam Sandler movie?
Yeah, for something got screwed up with the rights to the title, but so they had to change it a little bit, but it's essentially, it's anger management, the movie, the game. And the character,
the official game of the movie.
It's based on the novelization of the movie. Okay. So there's some little differences here and there, like, you know, he's now like this kind of white haired guy that looks kind of like some kind of crazy demon. So yeah. So not very different, but a little bit different. So yeah, been playing that. I'm surprised to find that there's actually like, I wasn't too sure based on the demo and even based on some of the earlier parts of the game if there was actually a game in there. But I thought maybe it was just, like, interactive cutscene because, well, like, early on it just seems to be an interactive cutscene. But there's actually a bit of a game there. I'm just I'm digging how it's kind of like a interactive anime a little bit.
I think Andrew Grohn on Twitter, I think that's how you pronounce his name, Andrew Grohn or Grain, was actually saying, he referred to it as demi-cinema, where it's like it's like a movie that you play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's big-time events, like, mostly, right?
So far, yeah. There's some free, kind of semi-free-roaming battle, but it's kind of one of those things, like, I mean, even like a Metal Gear game, where, you know, there's a whole lot of cinematic and then little gameplay sequence, and then... but, you know, seriously, other than that, I've basically only had time to kind of spend a little bit of time with some demos on Xbox Live, like Binary Domain and SSX, which fortunately don't have yet. But so I'm kind of ramping back up in my whole game playing habit.
Right. I'm excited for SSX.
need to pick that up too.
Yeah. That looks pretty great as someone who used to play SSX, but the demo, was the demo any good? I have literally seen almost nothing of this.
Just from kind of spending a little bit of time with it, it seems to me to be a lot like SSX 3, but they're doing some...
Perfect. Some, great.
Some new stuff. Right, right. But I spent like a... inhuman amount of time with the SSX games, except for was it On Tour, the kind of weird grunge metal one. I spent a lot of time with it, but nowhere near as much as with the other ones. And you know, this one was kind of, if I kind of disregarded the stuff, like they were trying to put stuff on the right stick instead of the face buttons, I guess you can kind of switch back and forth if you want, but yeah, I kind of immediately got into it and was immediately like, oh yeah, I was grinding on stuff. And I'm like, oh, it feels just like SSX. I guess on that point, they did a really good job. So yeah, excited to get a hold of the full thing and play it online. And you know, all that stuff we couldn't do back in like, what was it? Like 2000 when the first one came out. So kind of crazy.
Yeah. It definitely looks good. I don't think it actually has, like, a real multiplayer component. It's
it does not.
Like, oh, so it's like asynchronous stuff, right? Like, comparing...
Yep, like Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit kind of thing.
Right, right.
Which, cool. Okay. I don't understand that at all.
Why?
Because some of the best fun I had with SSX has been couch playing that game. Two people running down the hill at once.
Oh, split screen? Yeah.
I think that as an industry, we've kind of moved away from split screen as an option.
Yeah, but it's not like they have an online component to make up for it besides the asynchronous.
And yep, you're absolutely right. I'm just talking about why no couch co-op, but I have no idea why you would not put that in the game. I guess you can race ghosts, which is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, but you can't do it at the same time. It's like, oh, hey, I'm going to beat you. Like you're saying to somebody who played it 4 hours earlier.
Yeah. I guess you could play with party chat on or something, but it's still not quite the same.
Yeah, you're like, okay, let's all start at the count of three. One, two, go. Yeah.
That would actually be pretty funny to watch, I think. But
hey guys, we fixed your multiplayer mode. Yeah. took a little rejiggering, but we did it.
Yeah, so but that was about it for you, just demos and Asura's Wrath?
Yeah. I'm very, very unfortunately, but
I think you had better things to do.
Or just other things to do. Hopefully better things. Let's find out.
And no doubt we will get to those pretty quickly here, because it seems like that's going to be what the show is really about. But you did mention Binary Domain, and Eric, you've been playing Binary Domain, haven't you?
I played a whole lot more of Binary Domain than I thought I was going to. About 14 hours worth, actually.
Than you wanted to? Or
wait, 14 hours?
That game is a 14-hour campaign.
Wow. Okay, the entire thing is 14 hours.
Yeah,
okay.
On normal.
On normal, okay. Because I saw that and I thought maybe 6 or 7.
And
when I saw,
that doesn't
when I
count all the times that I restarted when I died. Like, not completely
right.
restarted at a checkpoint. So
right.
Yeah, it's a big game.
So what's Binary Domain about, exactly?
Okay, what it's about. I'll start off with the visual style, which you can remember Vanquish from a couple years ago.
Yep, I was about to say, yeah.
It will take that and combine it with the 2004 iRobot movie. That is the visual style.
Great.
And the story is the exact kind of insane that I expect out of Japan.
Right.
Which is a good thing.
So, yeah, possibly in particular the Yakuza devs who did this game.
Yeah, yeah. And I've only watched a bunch of those games. I've never actually played them, but it is right up that alley in terms of crazy. But you play as Dan Marshall, who's a member. Yeah, like, besides having the most generic name ever, he's a member of
the most Japan wrote what they thought was an American sounding name.
Yes,
kind of
exactly.
Name.
But he's a member of
I think
of
they have they you know they probably have one of those name those Western name generators like we have like. We have like a samurai generator. We have a Native American generator. We have,
oh yeah, like an XCOM or since the original.
Well,
Syndicate.
No, like you can hop online and get your Jersey Shore name. You know, I think they Japan must have a website. It's like, look, quick, hop online and find the best American sounding name. We're gonna call him Brad Jones.
Brad Jones.
It's like Brad Dane. Brad Dane. I think that sounds better for video games.
Oh, Brad Cook, maybe. I don't know. I thought maybe they had like a giant tank full of manatees that just pushed ping pong balls with words on them.
Oh, so they're writing episodes of Family Guy.
At this point, they might as well be.
Okay. So Dan Marshall.
Dan Arnold, what?
Oh, man. Now I'm just waiting for somebody to actually name a character Tom Arnold like in a Japanese game with an American name.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, Eric, what does he do?
Dan Marshall's a dude, and he kills things. That's
what does he kill?
Things.
Does he kill robots?
He does kill robots. He kills ass loads of robots, you might say. And it's fun.
I might.
But yeah, you play as Dan Marshall, who's part of a quote-unquote Rust crew. I made it through that time. It's a miracle. And you have teammates with equally pathetic names. And I guess it's a strategy third-person shooter. And the strategy works in a End War kind of way, where you can scream orders into your headset.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea of this.
Neither did I.
That wasn't exactly...
No, I'm just picturing you, like... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it wasn't exactly heavily marketed as voice-controlled title.
Yeah.
I just see you getting ready to play the game, having no idea that this was in it whatsoever, accidentally setting off the voice chat playing the game. So it's just like, hold on, I'm going to go get a sandwich. And you come back and the character's just standing there. Sorry.
Well, it works with your regular old Xbox 360 headset if you have one, though, so you don't need a Kinect. Okay. So it's like Mass Effect 3 just released those details about how you're going to be able to interact. It's like that, except 100 times simpler. Like, you can yell, cover me, and once in a while they might start shooting. Or you can say charge, which is what I always did. I just told my teammates to charge. They just ran in, except when they decided they didn't want to because they didn't hear me or something. So they just sat there. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is the voice controls kind of suck.
Okay. That's kind of where I thought that was going.
Yeah. but it's fun. It has an amazing sense of scale. You're fighting, it just like in Vanquish, you're fighting robots that are like hundreds of feet tall. But unlike Vanquish, it's actually fun to do so because it's not always just hit the glowy bit. And when it is hit the glowy bit, it's not an obtuse red ball hanging off the guy's forehead.
Hate for Vanquish notwithstanding, because that will not stand.
It's just had terrible boss fights.
Right. Well, when I saw the trailers and whatnot, I did get kind of a vibe of Vanquish meets Lost Planet. And do you think that would be fair to say?
Yeah, it's got the same kind of loose cover mechanics that Vanquish had, but okay. The shooting feels a little bit tighter, I guess.
Sure.
But anyways, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if there was anything else you had to say.
The shooting's okay, but what makes the shooting fun is the progression, which is like you come across these vending machines, and like a typical Japanese vending machine, it's got weird shit inside. This time the weird shit is upgrades for your guns.
And just laying around in like malls and shit.
Apparently. But like the killing the robots gets you some kind of money that they don't really go into. And with money, you can, I don't know what it's currency. But whatever.
Robot dollars.
Robobox. Robux. You to buy Robux. Upgrades for your guns. And you can turn, like, your standard assault rifle into a beast of a gun. And it's awesome. And each character has their own specialty weapon. Like, one guy's submachine guns, another guy's light machine guns. And you can upgrade all of theirs, too.
Well, that sounds way more... This whole thing sounds way more elaborate than I had any idea.
It's 100% more elaborate than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be a boring story, straightforward, somewhat maybe of a poor shooter because Japanese third-person shooters haven't been very good.
Yeah.
Not
come on! Part. were you there, Eric, at E3 with us when we took a look at it up at the...
No, that was you, okay. Ryan.
Yeah, so we took a look at it, and to tell you the truth, I wasn't super impressed back then. I think it was because we were just kind of coming off of seeing a bunch of FPSs that were kind of groundbreaking, and of course Gears of War 3 and Call of Duty and all that fun stuff.
Right.
So it just didn't come off as being all that groundbreaking. And of course you get such a short snippet that you can't you don't get to really see the full amount of the game, but it certainly sounds like it's kind of chock full of some cool features there.
Yeah, there's some bad AI pathing that kind of gets frustrating, but other than those things, it's an awesome game. I had a lot of fun with it.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Well, you'll be reviewing that pretty soon here, I think, right?
What?
Oh, There was okay. Never mind. There was some mix up here with some copies getting sent out, and I think I've been misinformed yet again. But
wait, no, I didn't hear what you said.
No, he didn't hear it.
Oh,
literally what?
Literally what?
I asked. You're going to be reviewing that soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I actually have the review done, and it has been in our faithful editor's hands for.
Oh no!
About 10 hours now.
yeah. I'll get to that later with my stuff too. But one game that you do have that you did review and that the review is up and people can go read it right now is you played Alan Wake's American Nightmare, and so did I actually.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, guys.
Dal, you didn't like Alan Wake, did you?
No. I not that I didn't like it. It just that it didn't. I don't think it. Gripped me story wise as much as everybody else. That's all.
Okay.
So Randy, did you play Alan Wake?
The original? Yeah. And I kind of had kind of the same thoughts as Dally. That and I just felt it got kind of samey, like pretty quickly. But you know,
in the combat.
Yeah, and just, you know, it's it just the at least early on, like, the whole idea that, hey, it's always nighttime, so, hey, you know, and it's the same kind of part of the world and that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm not going to be able to tell you to buy this game because it is more of the same combat that was in Alan Wake, and if you didn't like it then, there isn't anything new to make you like it.
Oh. So this...
But I don't think, I think I kind of agree with Eric that there's nothing new, but I think what they do have, rather than focus on making new stuff, they kind of focused on refining what was already there in terms of combat. There's a lot more variety to the combat. There's more there's more different kinds of weapons. There are. There's like submachine, Alan Wake has a submachine gun.
They all really feel kind of the same, though. The crux of the combat is aim a flashlight at the enemy and you will kill it with a gun later. There's some new enemy types that kind of change it up a little bit, and that does add a little bit of variety. But what I'm still trying to say is that if you didn't like the combat in the first game, you won't like it in this one either.
That's probably true. But the combat is better.
Yeah, the combat is a improvement over what it was, but not enough to, you know, like flip the script on it. But I didn't play Alan Wake or Alan Wake's American Nightmare for the story. I played it for the story, not for the combat.
Okay. you did it for the article.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And it was, in my eyes, great.
I love Alan Wake. I totally agree. The story, anyway.
That's kind of the consensus. Sorry.
Oh, no. Go for it, Dal.
No, I was going to say, that's kind of the consensus that I've been hearing is everyone seems to really like American Nightmare.
American Nightmare?
Yeah.
I've heard very mixed things on American Nightmare, actually. I've seen many people who do not like American Nightmare at all, and I think a lot of that comes from the presentation style. Personally, I love the presentation style. So in American Nightmare... the whole thing is sort of presented as a take it back just a little bit here. In the original Alan Wake, everything was kind of presented as like a couple episodes of a TV show almost. They had like a Previously on Alan Wake and on Alan Wake.
It was Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Twin Peaksian.
Yeah, it very much so. And in this one, it's sort of framed in the perception, like almost like as a single episode of that show. But
it's more like an episode of Twilight Zone, so it's Twilight Zonian.
And right down to the fact that there is a narrator that sounds like he's maybe channeling Rod Serling, not necessarily an impression.
In which I heard two people that will remain nameless that said that it made the game worse to them.
I find that totally. False.
That it was like the Twilight Zone?
Yeah,
turn off? Oh.
Yeah, they're complaining that the fake Rod Serling sounds like Rod Serling in this game.
And I thought maybe they thought it was something to do with Twilight. the Twilight Saga.
Yeah, that's it. Man, there's not even any vampires or werewolves in this. What are people talking about?
But yeah, the story was amazing in this.
Yeah, in Alan Wake's American Nightmare.
Yeah. They,
not the original, but the original had good story too.
All of the references made to culture and pop culture were befitting of the Alan Wake name, right. I guess.
I told Eric on Twitter my favorite reference in this game is they make a Men in Black reference when Alan Wake says to some girl that he's met throughout the course of the game. He says to her, "This rate's about a 9 on my weird shit-o-meter, my personal weird shit-o-meter." And that just, as somebody who grew up watching Men in Black and Men in Black
History, the rich tapestry of Men in Black.
The rich tapestry of Men in Black fiction. But when I was a kid, Men in Black was almost like Ghostbusters, at the original one, anyway.
Not think the sequel was shitty, though.
Oh, really?
I just thought that's that great.
Eric's right, it is full of sort of pop culture references and stuff, and it's befitting because in the fiction of Alan Wake wrote episodes for a show called Night Springs, which is sort of a Twilight Zone spin-off rip-off kind of inspired thing that they've invented for this game. But
well, there's episodes of that in the previous Alan Wake.
Right. Right, exactly. And he used to write for that show, but now that he is sort of back halfway with his foot back into the real world or something, the real world is sort of mimicking his mind imagination. So the world is taking on the sort of guise of something of the show because he used to write for that show. So it's kind of leaking his imagination is leaking out into the real world and affecting what's happening around him.
As much as Remedy tried saying this isn't a sequel, it's pretty much a direct sequel to the DLC.
Sort of, because I played the last piece of DLC for the original Alan Wake right before I played American Nightmare to go, because I couldn't remember enough from the writer was the name of that DLC. Yep. And there is a big, big jump between that game and this game. There's in American Nightmare they actually say it's been a 2 years since that happened.
Yeah.
And in this game the villain is a guy named Mr. Scratch. They don't actually call him Mr. Scratch. Every time
who is featured, I guess, spotlit in the original game.
Yeah, they mention him once or twice, and then they mention him in the DLC again. Very briefly in the DLC, and he's sort of Alan Wake's doppelganger, like his insane sort of imagination clone thing that's kind of going on a killing spree and whatnot. And
you know,
so
one
that
of those.
Guy, yeah, exactly. we've all been there, but in the DLC and in the main game, they never set him up really as a villain. Like it's pretty. He's pretty obscured in the original content, so it's kind of weird to jump from that, where he's almost completely not even mentioned more than like 3 times throughout the franchise, to suddenly you're tracking him down across the Arizona desert and fighting him throughout this game.
Yeah, and I gotta admit, one of the reasons I love this game is the amazing use of FMV.
Oh God, yes. If ever there was an argument to be made for more FMV in video games, like of a high quality, not even campy necessarily, Alan Wake's American Nightmare is the way to go. Like, that's all you need to show somebody.
Yeah, just not only the in-game TV segments that have Mr. Scratch on them, but the actual cutscenes are an awesome FMV too.
High quality, just high resolution, well done, well acted. FMV.
Yeah, I gotta know how they managed to fit all this in like a little over a gig.
Oh
yeah.
Wow!
It doesn't look like a studio like motion picture quality, but it looks better than some probably TV. It looks better than something you'd see on like a sci-fi original series or something. You know, something to that extent.
Yeah,
but,
that's accurate.
But, I totally enjoyed Alan Wake's American Nightmare as well, so I don't know what people are talking about not liking the Twilight Zone stuff. But I think we're going to move on to Dally here right now. Dally, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? What have I not been playing, guys? I've not been playing very many games, I guess is probably the best way to say it. I have also been
what a
playing
surprise.
Yeah, I've also been playing Adobe Photoshop, which is a wonderful, wonderful experience. I highly recommend.
Yeah, but you get paid for that, so don't count.
That is true. okay, well, I'll hop into the first one, Wipeout 2048. So I picked up a Vita last week. Yeah, well, okay. So here's the story. So I picked up a Vita last week on that that buy two get one free deal. I thought that was just too good.
Was basically the reason why my brother got a Vita.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, it's brilliant. I'm going to go pick one up. So I went and traded a bunch of old games in and my old iPod, my iPhone 3G and my PSP, and was essentially able to rack up enough cash to pick up the Vita. Got it. Went to promptly to Best Buy afterwards because every game was sold out over at GameStop, and everything was sold out at Best Buy. The only thing they had was, I think, Uncharted and FIFA. And I thought, all right, well, if I have to get a third game, and they don't have a third game here, so I'll go to another Best Buy. So I went Best Buy hopping all over the place. Always a fun experience. And then I went to Target, and I went to – I think I even stopped by Walmart at some point. Not one establishment had three unique games. And when they did, it was like – it was like Hot Shots Golf, Uncharted, and FIFA, which is – I really am only interested in one of those games. So I decided, you know what, I'm probably not going to end up getting buy two, get one. I picked up Uncharted, took it with me to Chicago over the weekend, didn't open it. And after speaking to I think Mike Wehner, Ryan Gann, a few other folks over there during our little get-together, we decided that maybe I'm better off getting Wipeout. So on the way back from Chicago. I returned it and picked up Wipeout.
Good decision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, you know what? I guess there's – I was trying to think of one word to describe the game, and I came up with sexy fast.
That's kind of cheating.
Yeah, exactly. It's so hard. It's so difficult.
Yes, it is.
I didn't mean hard in that way, but it's a very difficult. It takes a lot to master this game. Now, granted, I'm coming off of Forza and Mario Kart, which are actually pretty easy to control. This is very difficult to control, especially when you start getting some of the nuances of cornering and drifting and
It's all floaty and.
Yeah, it's very floaty, but that's some of the magic of the game. It's so pretty on that screen. Oh God, it's so.
Dally, if you don't mind, give me just 1 second here.
Sure.
For the listeners who don't know, Wipeout is a racing game with some combat elements in it as well. But in the game, rather than race cars or race, you know, whatever you would be carts or whatever you would be racing in a traditional game, you race sort of hovercraft, and so there are. The normal rules of gravity don't usually apply, and to go with that, there is no friction on these hover cars, so they're very slippery, very slidey, very fishtaily, and incredibly fast. So.
Yeah, it's so fast, and I've been passing it around to the folks that I work with to give it a shot, and everyone seems to say the same thing. I mean, it's gorgeous to look at. Everything is so smooth. Is it 60 frames per second?
I don't think so. I think it's locked at 30.
Is it locked at 30? I thought that it was floating around 30.
So that's what I've found kind of weird. I had heard bad things about the frame rate leading up to the launch, the official launch of the Vita 2. And I probably put in at least 10 to 15 hours into that game, and I have not had the frame rate drop noticeably below 30
frames. I don't
know
if I've ever seen it drop below 30, but I think I could swear it's gone faster than 30 before.
Mm. Yeah, okay. That might actually be possible. It's tough to tell with because it's going so fast and there's so much going on the screen at any given moment. It's really tough to tell how smooth
but
it's actually moving.
But even then, the 30 frames per second is kind of a detriment in that game.
Sure. No, I think I don't know. I think it works totally fine. I mean, the size of the screen is okay for the 30 frames per second. Mm. There'll be games out there that are 60, but I think 30 is totally fine for this. I'm just really impressed by the that graphical fidelity on this thing. The controls I'm still getting used to.
Takes a while.
I think it's it's quite a fun game, and there's a lot to do. They definitely filled it up with content. So yeah, I'll be playing that. I'm pretty stoked. And the one thing that I just noticed while I'm holding my Vita right now, with Wipeout loaded up, is on that the title, the kind of the home screen where it shows the hexagonal tracks that you select to play. That's all motion active. So if you kind of turn your Vita around, the whole page kind of slides around. It's kind of neat, kind of a neat effect. And then it reacts to audio. So as you're talking, the screen kind of pulsates the triangles, and then with the rear touch, the bad touch, you can kind of play around with the landscape a little bit. So there's the G spot. So it's kind of interesting.
The 3G spot.
Yeah, exactly. So there was that, and then I think the other game that that I picked up, I tried going through some of the downloads that I had that could transfer over, and almost nothing I had transferred. Little Big Planet wouldn't transfer over. A few of the games that I had just didn't work. So I did play. I did manage to get Armored Core 3 going, which I am not liking. It's one of those mech games, but upscaling from a PSP on a PS Vita.
Isn't that from?
From Software?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did the later entry. I don't know if they did Armored Core 3. They did 4 Answer was their thing, I think. I don't know who did it before 4 Answer. It might have been them. But they for certain did the latest one.
I mean, regardless, yep, it really amazes me. I don't say it amazes me, but it really shows off the difference in the graphical quality between Vita games and PSP games. Because you play that and it just looks like poo poo. It's really nasty. So,
right.
But yeah. So that's where I'm at with Wipeout and the Vita. I've also played. I started playing Red Faction Armageddon as my I call it my console kill, just to play out the play that game right before Mass Effect starts.
Dally.
Yeah.
Dally. I'm fairly certain that there was a podcast once. I think it was the JPEG fan cast or whatever, what have you. Where I told you specifically don't play Armored Core, or not fucking Armored Core 3, but don't play that either. Red Faction Armageddon, like don't do that to yourself.
So I was a huge fan of Guerrilla, Red Faction Guerrilla. I thought it was one of my favorite games of, I think it was 09. This one is not that great. But anyway, so it's definitely more action-oriented rather than open world. And I think the issues that are inherent to it. I'm not far enough along into the story or anything to really knock that yet. But I think
that's pretty bad too.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just kind of the overall gameplay just doesn't flow together very well. It comes off as kind of being a little bit disjointed. And I mean, the camera angles are very different from the previous one. Being a fan of the previous one, it definitely doesn't help. You almost have to come into this thinking it's a completely different game, because it kind of is. To even have a decent chance of enjoying it, but it just controls different, so it's gonna take some time for me to get used. It's almost too traditional in that third person action game genre. So I don't know. I'm not quite digging it yet, but I'm gonna plow through it here because I have it sitting on my pile. But the portable game, the handheld game I've been playing, I guess the phone game, is Hero Academy. Which I've been playing this for at least the past month now, but things have really started heating up now that they've added the dwarves in, and Steven joined in, and Sean, actually, the both of you guys joining in really kind of made me step up my game.
I convinced Sean to jump in on that. So
I went through a wonderful, I think initially playing the game when everybody was first getting the hang of it, I went through a pretty great winning streak. I had like 15 or 16 wins in a row before they kept track of it. And then since then, I've just gone into this horrendous losing streak because everybody has managed to catch up and they've kind of tweaked some of the stuff in there. And I'm pretty pathetic right now.
Conveniently, before they started keeping track, he was on a
losing
streak.
Yeah, I know, right? It's amazing. But it's a brilliant little game. And definitely the asynchronous gaming on mobile devices, I think it's the way to go for a lot of these. I'd love to see an asynchronous game on Vita or 3DS that works kind of the same way. I think those would be a lot of fun, but I don't know how those would work. So
Are you playing against Mike over at Thrifty Nerd at all?
No, not yet. I haven't challenged him yet, but I know you have a. He's kind of your bane of existence right now, right?
He's not just my bane of existence. He's everybody's. I don't know if he's ever actually lost. Like John was tweeting at the developers at Robot about how he never loses, how he's crazy good at this game.
How has he hacked the game?
Well, basically, that's basically what he said. They said that they were working on bots to come in and beat just to beat him at this game. So,
I'm not convinced he's not using his own bot.
Yeah, he never knows. He might have hired somebody else to do it.
If anyone could build one, it'd be that guy.
Yeah. I'm actually in the middle of a pretty good game with him. So it's a
really fun game, and if you haven't played, it's kind of a bummer that it hasn't appeared on other. Platforms like Android or anything else, because it
or even there's no iPad version of it either, because I only own an iPad.
You have to upscale, yeah, exactly. So they really do need to. Hey, who knows? I mean, that'll be the launch game for the iPad 3 next week. You never know. But they really need to step up their game and get this thing out on as many platforms as possible, because it's really fun. It's so easy to play.
They got it out on the platform that matters.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so easy to play, and it's so incredibly easy to spend money on this game. Like within the game, just to get the get your characters, right. Buy the extra dwarves and the elves and stuff. So,
the game itself is free, but to buy the extra two teams, it's $2 a piece.
Free meal. So. What have you been playing, Steven? That's enough about me. Let's talk about Steven.
Yeah, we'll move on to me. I played some Hero Academy 2, so that's great. But I've been
Hero
playing
Academy
my Vita 2 a lot.
That's already out.
Man, this is why I'm a writer and not a radio host.
You're not supposed to say anything about it yet. It's under embargo.
Oh, it's not NDA.
To be released in 2058. I don't know. 2048, because I've been playing way about 2048, in which I know, Dell, you just talked about it, but I kind of wanted to. This is your first. Wipeout game, right? Correct?
Correct. The first one I've really sat down to play.
The 30 frames doesn't bother you.
Well, I played Wipeout on the PS2 and I think even on the PS3 a little bit, but this is the first one I really sat down and, took the task.
But I am a huge Wipeout fan myself. Wipeout Pure was the first game I ever bought for my PSP, and for a long time was the only game I had for my PSP because I just kept playing it. But and a huge Wipeout HD fan as well. But the non-60 frames thing is kind of bothersome for me. I really like Wipeout 2048. There's just for fans out there who are thinking about getting the game, if there's anybody listening, just a couple things to note is that there is no race box mode in Wipeout 2048, which I find incredibly strange. Racebox is what they call the Wipeout people, Studio Liverpool, refers to. It's like the custom race option. In previous Wipeout games, you've always been able to start any kind of match at any different speed level on any kind of map right off the bat. So whereas this one, you need to unlock specific levels on a grid, and you can't until you unlock those, you can't play different events on different speed levels on different maps. So, and the only way to play them once you have unlocked them is to search them out specifically on this big grid. There's no way to kind of just scroll through them. So that's a little bit of an annoying thing for me, but. The non-60 frames thing is also kind of annoying after being spoiled by Wipeout HD. But other than that, I'm actually I'm really loving the game. Just, you know, as a kind of a stalwart fan of the series, it's a little bit easier than a lot of other Wipeout games. I don't mean to embarrass you, Dally, but it is kind of.
That's all right. I'm also an old man, well, so that's probably
the only sure. The only Wipeout game I thought was really hard was Wipeout HD.
Well, yeah, Wipeout HD is the pinnacle of the difficulty curve for Wipeout.
Oh, so is this actually more accessible than HD?
Yeah, it is certainly.
Oh, that's good to know.
Right, the tracks are much, much wider is one big thing about it, and just the controls are a little bit more forgiving, I think. You really have to be tappy with the... the air brakes on the things to get around the corner still, but other than that, it's a little bit more forgiving, which is maybe makes sense considering the control analog sticks on the PS Vita. While they are fantastic, they probably don't give you the same level of control that you might find on Wipeout.
The throw is really short.
Right.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So where and Wipeout, and for most games that's fine, but for something like Wipeout HD, you want to, or Wipeout just in general, you want to have like that really, really analog control at any given point. You really want to be able to just twitch it just a little bit to keep moving around. But they sort of fixed that for 2048 by, you know, like I said, making it a little bit more forgiving. We'll see. Wipeout HD is actually slated to come to the Vita here, and if you already own Wipeout 2048, you get that for free on the Vita. So we'll see how it stacks up once it's moved on to the system. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with it. The one thing that's kind of really stuck out to me is adding RPG elements to it. You accumulate experience points throughout the race, throughout races and stuff, to unlock new different types of vehicles, like a combat vehicles, which have a lot of health and do a lot of damage, and then speed vehicles, which are really fast and unwieldy, and then there's prototype vehicles, which all have some crazy weird sort of thing about them that makes them different than any other vehicle in the game. Like the first one, I've only unlocked one so far, but this one, it's the whole thing is it starts off really, really slow, but then as you fly over speed pads, it gets faster and faster and faster, and its top speed just gets higher and higher. Until you hit the end of the lap, and then it resets again. So it's really cool. It's really good for like speed laps and such, where they add a lot of speed pads for you to fly over. But it's, yeah, I'm in agreement with Dali about Wipeout 2048. Other than that, I've been playing the Vita as well. So, I've been playing, you know, other things on the Vita is what I meant to say. Superstar Delta, Lumines Electronic Symphony. And those are pretty great, but they are, as far as I know, pretty much like their predecessors.
So I think Super Stardust Delta is the best game out of the Vita.
I really like Wipeout 2048, but Super Stardust is a close. It's almost too close to call for me, and that's coming as a big fan of Wipeout, though. So
sure.
Let's see. But the one thing I've been playing a lot is Syndicate.
Ooh, nice.
Right.
Well, you've been playing sometimes.
Yeah, so let me just get this out of the way right off the bat, which is Syndicate on the 360 anyway freezes. It's got a really bad freezing problem.
As in it's hard-locking the entire system?
It is hard-locking the entire system, requires a reboot.
You mean you have to stand up?
Yeah, I have to get up from where I'm sitting and actually physically press the button on the system, right? So none of you guys have played this yet, have you?
No, I have not.
No, not yet.
Just the demo, yeah.
Just the demo? I want to hear your thoughts quick on the demo.
I really, really liked it. I actually just kind of fired it up. I think it was the night that it came out and got matched up in a game with three other people, but not even on my friends list. They're just random people. And, only a few minutes into the mission, we were kind of cooperating and working really well as a team. And this is without, like, communicating really at all. No voice chat. And I just thought it was really cool. It was, like, really strategic. It fell apart, though, and I tweeted about it, actually, when one of the people playing, who had been doing really well up to that point, didn't actually know how to reboot the other players when they were down.
Oh,
so
sure.
We basically just all stood around screaming for someone to come reboot us while he kind of just walked back and forth between us, like staring at us. It was really surreal because the game doesn't end until the game doesn't reset until everyone on the team, at least in what I was playing, at least until everyone on the team goes down. And so this guy was, you know, in no danger of being killed. So the game wasn't going to end. It was just, you know, three other people just kind of languishing there on the ground, yelling, you know, reboot me over here. And this person just kind of wandering around like, what do you, and I can kind of imagine this person like trying every button on the controller. Just trying to figure out, like, what do
I
do?
Right.
It's like a dog trying to figure out what to do when its owner's collapsed.
Exactly. Help us, boy. Help us. We're falling. But other than, I mean, he, you know, whoever it was, they like, figured it out. And it was kind of funny because, like, clearly no one else had bothered to get up and get, like, a headset. With no one's talking. But he figured it out and it carried on, and actually ended up playing it like the same stupid demo mission. Not stupid, but like two or three more times after that, just trying to get better at it. And yeah, I really liked it. Okay. So that's my long-winded explanation.
Yeah. So, okay, back to I just wanted to get that in quick. The freezing thing, it's funny that you should mention that nobody got up and got their headsets. So, because apparently this freezing issue is connected to the voice chat. This started happening to me. It happened to me about four or five times before I started looking around to try and find some kind of solution for it. And then when I went online, I couldn't find sort of any mention of this even being acknowledged by Starbreeze, the developers. So that happened to me about four or five times in the single player. And then I got online and started doing the multiplayer with some guys off of Twitter. And then each and every one of us froze one by one by one during the cooperative campaign. And so I got onto we took a break, and then in the interim, I went onto Twitter and hit up Starbreeze about what was going on, like telling them that it was freezing and whatnot. Like, hey, what do you guys have anything to say about this? And I got this really generic sounding, almost Twitter bot tweet saying, like, if you're having problems with syndicates, you can go to this link here. And it
and also buy some Viagra.
Do you like sex with hot teens?
Get an iPad 4.
And it led me to a link to the Syndicate EA technical support page, which there is nothing on it. It's just an error. All it does is return an error message. The entire page is the EA homepage, just with a big huge error message saying like, "Oops, did you do something wrong when you tried to get to this website?" And again, I looked online and it was a lot of people complaining like, oh, the game is freezing on me. I can't figure out what's going on. And everybody saying like, has anybody mentioned this? Has Starbreeze acknowledged this? And nothing from Starbreeze. And then I went back onto Twitter and said, yeah, I'm actually looking for a quote for an article I'm planning on doing about what you guys are doing about this. And then almost immediately I got a tweet coming back to me saying, like, we're aware of the issue and we're working on it and we're going to fix it. And here's a link to the thing. And there was a link to a really small little paragraph that says Starbreeze is aware of the issue and is working on a fix. But if you looked at the timestamp, it was the exact same day that I tweeted at them, like that I was tweeting at them and talking to them on Twitter. So I'm pretty sure they put that up after I kind of I didn't mean to threaten them exactly, but I was at the time I was really pissed because I really like Syndicate. I just finished my review. I gave it a 5 stars. But hopefully by the time this podcast goes live, it'll be up. But so I was having so much fun. I was having so much fun and I fucking and nothing from these guys, and then finally and just get like, we're aware of the issue is all it says, and then like
more like scram kid.
Yeah. And but yeah, the minute I did that, they sent me to a page. I think they just put up a page in like a kind of like a this, oh shit, somebody's gonna talk about this, somebody's gonna acknowledge it. And then I wrote up the article.
They clearly weren't expecting anybody to even play this game.
Well, right, because EA certainly wasn't, because there was no marketing coming out the gate for this.
Okay, I mentioned this earlier to someone else. Last year, EA partners put out Bulletstorm, and then 364 days later, they put out Syndicate, you know, both abstract first-person shooters with different mechanics.
Oh, and you know what's even crazier?
And neither one of them gets marketed.
You want to hear something even crazier about this? This game has like a skill. What do they call them in Bulletstorm? Skill shots, or it has like a kind of multiplier kind of system like that. Like the skill shots. Like while I was playing Syndicate, I was constantly thinking to myself, you know, this kind of plays like Bulletstorm a little bit.
But
so
yeah,
that's how you recharge your powers.
Apparently, they don't want to market those first-person shooters that come out the last week of February.
I guess. But they clearly sunk a lot of effort and time into getting people for this game, because, like, Brian Cox and Rosario Dawson and Michael Wincott all playing roles in the game, and they got a lot of licensed music. Skrillex did obviously that music for the trailer, and that shows up in the game at pretty much the perfect point it could have possibly shown up. That Skrillex song remake of or remix of the original.
Did it sound? Music. Did it? I think I remember. It sounded like whoop whoop whoop.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's more like whoop 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 whoop.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, so Syndicate is really, really good. It's a cyberpunk kind of thing. What we kept coming back to when we were playing on the multiplayer, I think it was like Dave Voiles, Mike Wehner, and Mike Dow, all of us were playing. The thing we kept coming back to about the sort of story for Syndicate is that it's the people that you play with in that game are really bad people, and they don't make any kind of like big deal out of it. It's just kind of weirdly refreshing to see a game where you're just playing as the bad guys, working for the bad guys, with the bad guys constantly around you.
It's a bad guy in a bad world.
It's a bad guy in a bad world, exactly. And you're not just when you kind of see that, you kind of get. I got kind of a little bit contemplative about the fact that almost every fucking video game character in history is either some angry dude with a mysterious past or some idealistic youngster that just constantly I guess it made me question the motivations for characters in other video games, like how characters suddenly
the main character in Binary Domain is a troubled youngster.
Exactly. It's just like these people with these crazy, like overzealous ideologies without any seeming reason for being such like shining examples of human compassion. And it just made me start to wonder about that. And but the story is like is actually pretty good. I asked Eric you about this before the podcast, if you've read Neuromancer or Snow Crash, and I think you said read both.
Yes, I did. This is like 3 days ago, so I kind of forgot.
Yeah, this borrows very heavily from both books, like the aesthetic and the storyline. If I don't know, have you guys read Neuromancer or Snow Crash or anything like that? Cyberpunk?
No, I haven't.
You have though, Ryan or
Randy.
Randy, sorry.
Actually, a big fan of kind of that cyberpunk subset of sci-fi. So,
yeah, I almost called you Ryan there because I was thinking about Ryan Gann and how he still needs to approve my goddamn review.
Well, I do it for you, but
right,
I have that ability.
You're pretty busy, which we'll get to in a little bit here.
Yeah, but. I would, trust me. I'd do it if I could.
Right. I don't want to just keep rambling on like this. Like, did you guys have any specific questions about Syndicate? I mean, there will be a review, clearly.
That'll answer everything.
Yeah.
Please direct all questions
Babby to formed?
How what, Eric?
How is Babby formed?
she way insane mother. They took Babby back to New York to Babby to rest. I am truly sorry for your loss.
That almost sounded like George R. R. Martin.
So yeah. Cool.
So that's
what I've been playing. Yeah.
Okay. I guess we'll take a break.
You gotta put emphasis in it. All right, well, great job, Steven. You know, let's take a quick break right now, and we'll come back with the news.
Sure.
You gotta do it like that, not like let's take a break, guys.
Yeah, but then you have to have enthusiasm and want that.
I have my.
You need to announce that you're taking a break with all the same enthusiasm that you would normally say, "Where are the white women at?"
What's funny is...
Where are the white women at?
I have my...
Let's take a break.
Break time, motherfucker.
You're missing out on my stripper DJ voice, which I drop every once in a while. It's like, all right, everybody, thank you for listening to the side quest. Coming up next, we got Cinnamon. Cinnamon, put your hands together for Cinnamon coming up on the dance floor. Talking about the PlayStation.
She's got daddy issues.
Also got hot news.
We got hot news.
And hot boobs.
Cold drinks.
Okay, so we'll take a break. Are we actually back? Or...
We're back. We're back this time.
Okay, I guess we're back for real this time. You guys want
to talk about news? We got news to talk about, guys. Let's zip through this news so we can get to the big segment, the hot topic.
The TM, Dan Bordowski.
Yeah, I got to get some feather earrings and some arm warmers. So.
That say My Chemical Romance on them?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, don't you be talking shit about where I buy my Slipknot t-shirts from.
Okay, okay.
It's the same place I get my Dexter's Lab t-shirts.
Yeah, it's convenient.
Oh, man. Okay, so news. Vita sold 1.2 million, including 686,000 in the U.S. and Europe.
I mean,
cool.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, it's not a great number, but it's not like a horrifying number either. I mean, it's kind of a number.
Regardless of what Sony wanted you to believe, 500,000 in the U.S. and Europe wasn't exactly a great number, but they did exceed that, at least.
Yeah, they sold as many in the U.S. and Europe in a week, about a week, as they did in Japan in 2 months.
Yeah, well, that's not too bad. In Japan, they sold 380,000 units.
Right. So. But the drop rate of console purchasing in Japan is also a lot is a lot weirder than it is in the Western world as well, because they drop prices, they have weird price drops, and things are more expensive in Japan, and it's a kind of a different setup there. I have been led to believe.
I touched on it briefly earlier, and I actually just posted a quick little article about the kind of the whole sellout situation and how that buy two get one free promotion really helped get people on board, I think, to pick up a Vita that may have waited. I mean, I was going to wait, but that promotion just seemed too damn good. And I already know we already have a couple comments from folks on the article that are saying the exact same thing, that kind of pushed them over the edge.
That must be true in other parts of the country besides Northeast U.S. because I went to a GameStop, a Target, and a Walmart in the past week, and they have all had like full stocks of Vita.
Yeah, the Vitas. Yeah. The Vitas are in stock, and they're restocking the Vitas actually daily, from what a couple employees told me, which is actually really good on Sony's part. They're getting like Best Buy is getting like 15, 16 in a day, and they're selling out really quickly. But the games are what's not stocking fast enough. And the promotion's over with, but I just went into Best Buy today, and I took the photo that's on our front page. And that shows, I mean, all there was left at Best Buy was Army Corps of Hell, Little Deviants, Uncharted, and Rayman Origins. I mean, even fucking FIFA was sold out. So I think that that promotion worked really well. I'm almost interested to see if other, you know, I mean, the Wii U launches later this year, and who knows if Nintendo will do anything similar. But I could see companies doing things like this to their advantage if they're launching a console.
Right. Well, Shipwreck over at Cheap Ass Gamer was talking about it a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month or two ago, about how when a DVD comes out, on sale, and then the price goes up after a week or two. And so you get those early adopters in right away, people who wouldn't normally buy something right off the bat like that, unless it wasn't on sale or, in this case, you know, there was the deal. And I think that, yeah, it's a really smart move, and it was it's sort of like a way of not to the extent that dropping the price would, but it's sort of a way of generating sort of interest that a price in the same way that a price drop would, just not quite the same level, obviously.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And these sale or and you saying that they're selling out those, and that's if they're selling out all those games, and even around here in North Dakota, they've been selling out pretty quickly too. The Near, which allows you to see how many people are playing around you at any given time, has been incredibly full, and North Dakota is a very flat, wide open land, so you would expect people to be. So people are very spread out around here. And
are you sure that's not buffaloes that are playing the Vita?
Buffaloes are almost extinct because. So don't even bring up those memories.
Buffaloes are crazy for OLED technology.
man, they go crazy.
Yeah.
So I've seen a ton of. I mean, in my building alone, day one there were three people in my dorm building with Vitas, all playing at the same time, and that was for very first day. But all those games selling out not only in stores, but you got to imagine at least some games are moving on the store too, because I didn't buy a single game like a physical copy of a game. All my games are digital, so some people are obviously buying it. So it's really interesting to see it kind of shifting.
Yeah,
like that.
I'll be interested to see how it actually holds up after that first week. I think I think that the first month is going to be really interesting. It'll probably be pretty high, but then, to see what kind of, I mean, a drop off is expected.
Yeah, it's probably going to drop at least 50% this week.
Yeah, but I'd be curious to see how that holds up over the next couple months here. I mean, there aren't very many big games coming. You have Resistance coming, and then I think Little Big Planet and Gravity Rush show up in June sometime. So those are really the only other new games they have coming out, big games they have coming out for a while. So it'll be interesting to see how that.
There are a bunch of games that have been announced that don't have. There have been a bunch of games that have been announced that don't have release dates. So those could definitely shift in that amount of time, and there could be downloadable games. Sony doesn't really announce a game coming out until it's actually out on the store sometimes. So we'll see, because a lot of the digital games have been pretty great too.
So I mean, that's a current console. There's also here's a segue. Ready? Here's a segue. There are potentially new consoles that are being worked on.
Yeah, guys, guess what? There's going to be a new Xbox and PS4. Boom.
No way.
Yeah, so
will it come with third cameo element of Power Game?
Yeah, cameo, yeah.
That's all you care about.
Yes. Okay, well, we don't even really have to talk about this, I guess.
I think we do. I mean, the only reason I'm saying I think we do is because Microsoft said, no, we're not going to show off Xbox at there's not going to be new
publicly.
Product announcement this year. Right, and this is around the same time that Nintendo was showing off the Wii U hardware to developers. So it's kind of a really nice coincidence, I guess you could say, that it's happening around the same time. I still think that Microsoft is probably going to show something off at E3, but you have Bethesda, Kojima Productions, and things have been going up these last 2 weeks for job openings for next generation hardware like crazy. I mean, almost every day you'll hop on Joystick and there'll be a new job listing to work on a next gen project, unannounced next gen project. So I'd have to assume that not only is the next Xbox potentially the PS4, I'd probably say the PS4. Isn't yet, but the next Xbox I think is being shown off.
Yeah, well,
it's in development in some form. Like,
well,
yeah,
they have been for 2 years now. But I mean, yeah, I guess I'll on the Xbox.
We have a...
Steven, are you lagging again? I guess all we need to say for Xbox is they're showing more and more to more people. So
yeah.
E3 is looking more and more likely.
Cool.
Well, we have a code name for the new Xbox, don't we?
The Dodge Durango?
Dodge Durango, yeah.
The Canyonero, right?
Canyonero.
I saw that on Twitter a few days ago.
The Django
Unchained.
Some more
mileage out of it, yeah. Oh, Django Unchained?
You got mileage out of the Canyonero.
Yeah, good. Oh, yeah, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Usually takes about 10 gallons of gas to do that.
Okay, and the other... next generation console got a little bit of news today from Kotaku, who has a source that says the PS4 will shockingly not use the cell processing unit. I don't know about you guys, but this completely took me by surprise.
Of course.
Are you flabbergasted?
Is it a rumor or is it fact? You know?
Wow. They have a source, so it is reportedly they aren't using cell.
It's rumor until
exactly. But I mean, come on, that was a Ken Kutaragi project that flopped,
right?
And Ken Kutaragi is gone, so I don't see anybody trying to wave that flag anymore.
Yeah, I think that, and I kind of got this from back at the PS3 launch, talking with people from SCEA, and they were, you know, kind of like, when the whole thing was going down with Kutaragi kind of going out of the picture, they were very much starting to talk about, you know, the next console is going to be led by SCEA. We're gonna make the high level decisions. We're going to, you know, have a lot more say in like how this thing is built, and it's not going to be like, you know, one person's kind of fantasy machine that has, yeah, that there's no way to bring it. Because, you know, obviously a lot of people are really bitter about, you know, oh, here's all these decisions that are making this thing, you know, $600, and developers are tearing their hair out and stuff. So,
yeah, to a point where 2 years after it launched, Activision was saying, hey, we're going to quit developing games for the PS3 because it's really a pain in our ass.
Yeah, just not worth it kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that the PlayStation 4 will be something a lot more familiar to developers.
Yeah, they have to make it user and developer friendly in order to, you know, make it as easy to develop for as the Xbox was this time around.
Yeah, I think again they've learned a lot from.
It's interesting that you guys say that, because it's almost like now you're seeing Nintendo and Sony start to take the Microsoft path, and how they really want to make the development units really developer friendly, so that these consoles will be able to they're more tailored towards creating the games rather than delivering all this crazy technology.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, Nintendo had it easy going at the beginning of this generation, because developers developing for the PS2 could port the game to the Wii, but as the PS2 got older, they couldn't keep making those games. You just see, you know, no, there wouldn't be multi-platform games that included all three consoles anymore. So right. Nintendo had to boost up their hardware, and now Sony just needed to make it different. So, yeah. Gally?
I'm in agreement. I don't have anything else to say. I'm shaking my head.
I think we're all just kind of pondering this future where all the consoles are basically the same box. And everyone wonders why are there even multiple consoles anymore?
Who was it that said that? Was it David Jaffe that said that he wanted?
No, it was what's his name? Silicon Knights.
Oh yeah.
Dennis Dyack?
Dennis Dyack.
Dally, I'm pretty sure David Jaffe said, man, fucking consoles, fucking cooking, fucking suck shit, fucking
robot voice.
Just like that.
Just like
the robot voice.
Okay, a couple of things from PSN to mention that are of note. Killzone 3 multiplayer. The first was it Sergeant. Mm-hmm. Up until Sergeant is now free on PSN, and you can get the entirety of the multiplayer for $15.
Or cheaper, right?
$7.50 if you're a PlayStation Plus member. So, like, all four of those guys can get it cheaper.
All four of them.
But, yeah.
I'm a PlayStation Plus member.
So you're one of the four.
Oh, wow, it's two of the four. 50% of PlayStation Plus members are on the podcast.
What's surprising is... Yeah, no, what's surprising is a lot of...
On this podcast.
What? He sounded like a sad robot. Did
it's Marvin, the paranoid android.
Did Hugo just lose automation?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Anyways, let's move on.
Okay. So, also, you can pre-order Mass Effect 3 on the PlayStation Store.
Now, is that so you can be sure they don't, you know, run out of copies?
I heard that can be a problem.
Yeah.
You can only pre-order it if you get the moon or the space balloon.
What?
The space balloon that they shot up all those Mass Effect copies in.
Yeah,
space.
Yeah. You have to buy the space balloon?
You have to buy the space balloon then, to get the pre-order.
That'd be great.
You have to buy the airspace that the space balloon will land in. You know, oh, fuck. That old thing is so stupid.
Yeah. Oh,
but meanwhile, our review copy will be a week late.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
It will be delivered by, yeah, a weather balloon or something.
That's how they're delivering them all?
Yeah. Just gonna kind of float them in their direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your review will be done by tree.
Well, okay. One more news thing that we have to at least make fun of. Pokemon Black and White.
Oh God.
Let that sink in. Pokemon
Black and White 2.
Black and White.
Black and White version 2.
How did that happen?
Correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first proper Pokemon game that has a 2 appended to it, right?
Yep.
Correct.
This is the Final Fantasy X-2 of the Pokemon series.
That's exactly what it is.
Including costume changes. Final
Pokemon 2. Yeah. Including costume changes. Oh, man. So Pikachu in this version is a pop star assassin spy, right?
Precisely.
But, I mean, it's kind of part of this, too, is that it's still a DS game.
Right? Yeah,
right.
A 3DS game.
Which, you know, it kind of makes sense in the fact that there's 170 million people who can buy that game instead of just 15.
Right.
Yeah, but, I mean, Nintendo has done... Nintendo has released multiple SKUs of their games on multiple consoles before. I mean, Legend of Zelda, right. They made a GameCube and a Wii version.
But in that case, the two different versions were very much the same. If you were to build a Pokemon game for the DS and the 3DS, you'd have to, you know, basically double the game, in a sense, because you have to make it 3D.
Yeah.
So you have to have two images going. And it's not as simple, it's just...
You know, I kind of wonder if whatever they do Pokemon-wise with the 3DS, if it ends up being something maybe different enough from traditional Pokemon that they can't, you know, maybe that this Black and White 2 is kind of like the swan song of traditional Pokemon games.
No, Black and White 2 was a Peter Molyneux game.
It's actually going to be Pokemon Black and White 2, the Peter Molyneux game.
Peter Molyneux, that's the new Pokemon.
Yeah, that will be one of the Pokemon you can start with.
Peter Molyneux.
That is so going in the notes. Peter Molyneux.
Peter Molyneux, I like it.
But yeah, so that's the thing that's happening.
Oh man, that's
gotta be someone's gotta make that game, Peter Molyneux.
Be like an indie game.
The whole thing about it being a DS game, not a 3DS game, I just Shin Megami Tensei Devil Summoner 2, god damn it, came out.
Devil Survivor 2.
Devil Survivor 2, right. Yes. Devil Summoner is a different game. That's a DS game too. And they actually ported the original game, the Devil Survivor 1, to the 3DS. So you would think that they know at least the basics of how to just make the game for the architecture, and they're kind of doing that too. Do you think this is going to be like a trend? Like people are just going to keep making DS games instead of 3DS games?
No, I think this is probably the last couple times it's happening.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know. I mean, it'll definitely fade out. But right now, there's so many DSs out there, and
yeah.
maybe people are just afraid that there's not enough to make the big sales. Although Pokemon, you'd think out of any game out there, Pokemon in Japan would be a huge system seller.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, I mean, that is sort of like Monster Hunter Kids, right? Like, for kids?
I mean, that would murder the Vita for, like, half a year if that came out.
Yeah.
It makes you think. The 3DS, I think I read some numbers recently that said that it got to, I think, 5 million units in Japan faster than...
Than everything,
basically. Yeah. And so that's really encouraging. And that definitely helps when you start thinking, well, like, wait, or what are they trying to say? Are they like, yeah, maybe the 3DS is kind of a fad, and we're just going to make, you know, a DS2 that's not a 3D machine, you know, something like that. But yeah, I think that, I mean, maybe the more realistic possibility here is that they are doing something Pokemon related that's very much just for 3DS. They want to make sure they've sold more systems before they launch it. And so the easier thing to do in the meantime is just kind of build on to Black and White for the DS.
Yeah, well, there's that, and, you know, Dally and Steven might be right in that even though, you know, I think it's 15 million worldwide, the major game companies don't flaunt numbers unless there's a reason behind it. And if they're saying, look how many units we have in the wild, you know, maybe they are seeing a lack of support from publishers and developers putting games out for them. So maybe
you know what? Or at the same time, they may be saying, hey, the 3DS is completely backwards compatible with the DS.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a 3DS game. And maybe there's
good point.
Maybe it could be some type of, you know, I think they'll definitely be promoting it as being playable on both.
Sure, but you know. I don't think that would. How many 3DSs is a new DS game going to sell? Like Black and White 2 will sell to current 3DS owners, but they're not. I don't think they're doing their sales for the 3DS itself any favors by doing.
But you also have the DSi is $130,
right?
And the DSi XL is $170. So, you know, they'll have every single game retailer under the sun saying, well, this is $130, but you can only play these games. This is $170. It's 3D, and you can play all those games, too.
You know what? That's absolutely right.
True.
Yeah.
True.
And that those prices are the same in Japan, then, the difference between the two systems price-wise?
I think the difference is the same, but the prices aren't the same.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. But the disparity, yeah, ratio.
Yes,
okay.
So that's news.
That's news.
Busy week. Yeah, that's news. We don't need to talk about all the other controversies because there was far
too
many of
them. Yeah. Let's take a quick break and... Yep. We'll get back to why we brought Randy on the show 2.5 hours ago, and that would be to talk about Pixel.
We'll be back!
Side quest after that short but sweet wonderful break. Again, we're joined by Randy for this specific reason of chatting about is it Pixel or is it Pixel Magazine? What do you prefer?
Pixel's fine.
Pixel.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're on a first name basis. We like to think that right out of the gate, you're on a first name basis with Pixel. Magazine, if you really want to be formal.
Mr. Magazine. What was that, Eric?
Does Pixel Magazine put out on the first date? What we all want to know.
It just depends on how many drinks you buy it.
Okay. How many microtransactions I pump into
it? How many microtransactions, yeah.
It likes to be touched.
It does. It does. And it is the first fully lickable
So this is made just Jessica Chobot.
Yeah, actually, we've been trying to get her endorsement, but for some reason, she won't return my phone calls. I should probably try speaking instead of just breathing really heavily.
You'll just have to wait for Mass Effect 3.
I was about to say, is Pixel Magazine going to be cameoing in Mass Effect 3?
No.
And then is okay. Pixel Magazine going to be doing a preview of the game?
Mass Effect 3 is in the first issue.
Oh, see, I see how it is. There's a little bit of double dipping.
It all comes first circle.
Well, why don't you let us know right off the bat what is Pixel Magazine for those people who don't know?
What was it to quote you from earlier, Dali? You were saying, what haven't I been playing? What isn't Pixel? Now, actually, Pixel is for the completely uninitiated. And those who are just kind of confused and or, not quite sure where they are at the moment.
For the dullards.
Yes, for the dullards out there. Pixel is a new multi-platform video game magazine, and it is designed. This is very important. It is designed to be read on the iPad iPad. I get very excited about this. It's designed to be read on the iPad and or Android-based tablets. And a lot of times, like early on when I started to tell people about the magazine, I would say, yeah, it's an iPad magazine. It's an iPad / Android magazine. And they thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So it's a magazine in print form that's all about iPad and Android games. And so, you know, obviously that's not the case. You read it on your tablet. But we cover games that are for mobile devices and for tablets, of course. But it's like a full, true multi-platform magazine, like the olden days when there used to be such things. I guess there still kind of are, but this one is doesn't murder any trees. And actually, we don't even use paper in the production of the magazine. Not that that's that huge of a thing, but everything we do is...
I kind of appreciate that. I'm kind of a green person, I guess.
Yeah, well, we don't write on paper. We do all of our note-taking on iPads, and it's all digital. It's pretty cool. It is going to be a monthly magazine. I haven't really talked about that too much. I know when we did a Kickstarter project... just a little over a month ago now, where we're offering, you know, if you wanted to back us to get the first issue published, you could get the first issue or like the first year or a 2-year subscription. But at the time, you know, we weren't really, we're trying to gauge the interest level in it. And that's, trust me, doing a Kickstarter is a great way to gauge the interest level in something you're working on. And it can be very, very encouraging, as it was in our case. Initially it was kind of like, well, how often are we going to put this thing out? And just basically kind of based on the amount of enthusiasm there was, we decided that it's going to be out every month. So
that's good news.
Yeah, just like a real or not real regular magazine. I'm so sorry.
Just like
real magazine, not like.
Hey, you know, it may be a digital magazine designed to be read on tablets, but it has feelings.
I swear to God, I was literally in my head thinking to myself, "Don't say real magazine because that's not what you mean, but you know that you're going to Freudian slip on that or some bullshit." But no, I meant regular magazine, traditional magazine.
I actually like the digital magazine approach more than a real magazine because for people who don't know me, I have 20-some-odd magazine subscriptions, and my stack of magazines coming in weekly and monthly is huge. So whenever one of them offers a digital subscription, I get right on it. Because then I can have it just with me on my tablet. I can have back issues with me. This is great.
Yeah, I don't buy magazines, but I recently started buying monthly comic books. And I've kind of gotten to the point where I don't know what to do with all of my back issues of my comic books once I'm done with them, because I don't know if I want to keep them or if I want to try and sell them or if they matter that much to me. And I've been contemplating just getting them on the on my iPad, because I take my iPad with me everywhere I go. And this so this actually sounds like a really interesting kind of thing to me as somebody who's kind of been sort of leaning towards doing stuff like that. I have never done anything like that in the past, so I'm kind of interested to check out your this magazine now to see how it works.
Well, hey, here's the advantage that I have to going digital. iPads are much easier to take into the toilet than a pen. That's essentially it.
You know, he's not wrong.
Yes, that is actually true.
Yeah. But it is a lot. It's a lot worse though if it goes actually into the toilet.
Man. Well, you have the advantage right now where Apple is really kind of pushing the iPad as a kind of a digital platform. You know, there's they went through the whole presentation in the little mini press conference in January about that whole kind of educational iBook aspect. So they really are pushing people reading on the iPad over other traditional media.
Yeah, I mean, they took a big step towards that even last year with the introduction of the whole newsstand platform. They're obviously it's in their best interest to be, you know, super serious about it. But I think they're also kind of playing off of the, just kind of playing off the, I think the general kind of feeling out there that, you know, everything's kind of going digital. I think they probably saw that a lot in people wanting to make digital magazines like Pixel or even like you were saying in comic books. I mean, that's gone up hugely in the past year alone, the availability of official availability of comic books on something like iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So, I was going to ask, I mean, a couple questions. How many people are working on this project along with you? I mean, is it a considerable group? Is it just a few folks?
It's a pretty small team. That's kind of historically, I mean, for those who don't know my background, I started out as one of the kind of core team on IGN back before it was IGN, when it was the Imagine Games Network. And we were, you know, N64.com and Saturn World and PSX Power and that kind of stuff before, you know, kind of all unified. And, you know, that was a really small, tight-knit team. And kind of all through my editorial career in the publishing world, we were these kind of small, tight-knit teams, like launching official Dreamcast magazine. There were just like a handful of us. Even PSM, you know, at its height was, you know, kind of a few people. And so, I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now. We have like a core group of people who are working on it. And a large amount of that is myself and our managing editor, who is my girlfriend actually, and she's a pretty serious gamer, and she comes from a traditional kind of like me, like a traditional publishing background, but we also have contributors, and they're kind of like more than normal contributor. They're they've been pretty involved. That are people I've worked with in the past. Whether it's on Joystick or when I was at Future on PSM and some of the other magazines. So we're really hoping to get for future issues to kind of grow this. And in terms of the folks we have contributing to it, we want to really get a lot of different voices, a lot of different kind of angles on the hobby. And just kind of like, hey, if you're someone that has something interesting to say, we want to make sure, you know, you kind of, you have an outlet to say something that's kind of new and fresh.
Right. Do you think that pedigree of coming from the original Imagine Games Network and all those different sort of places like that has helped you kind of get this thing off the ground a little bit?
I think, I know, that probably if going into something right now, like, you know, a lot of people I told, hey, I want to launch a new video game magazine. And of course, a lot of the initial reaction was like, wow, really? Magazine? Print is dead. And then I tried to explain, well, you know, and I think I kind of got some really good feedback about this by saying, you know, okay, the print in the terms of the written word is, you know, clearly not going anywhere. I think people tend to confuse the idea of words that are written on anything. In this case, the medium just happens to be a screen versus a printed page. And I think where people get a little bit confused is, you know, print in terms of paper is definitely on the way out, but print as, you know, these kind of traditional things like layouts and, you know, reading something that's more of a, you know, anthology of stories that's put out on a specific schedule versus just constantly throughout the day, or something that's a little more curated than a typical blog or website, that I think is still going to have a lot of appeal. So going into making Pixel, I think that, yeah, coming from a background of having, you know, done probably a couple hundred issues of a print magazine, and having that experience of putting together something every month that, you know, has to be, you know, interesting enough to make people want to keep coming back for more, but also has to stand out against, you know, at one time maybe, you know, half a dozen or more competing publications, and also, you know, just kind of having to make something that's, I guess you'd say, kind of, you know, something you want to sit down with and spend some time with. That's kind of where that's really helped. And just in managing the whole thing, too. It is quite, as I found, and after not having been in it for a few years, I think I kind of forgot a little bit about how much effort's involved, but it all came rushing back pretty quickly.
Like a geyser.
It was like a fire hose in my face. Every morning, it was like, if you woke up every morning, someone said, good morning, and turned a fire hose on your face. That's making a magazine.
Actually, the you said something in there that was very interesting, that the written word isn't obviously going anywhere. And you could actually maybe say that in this day and age, with the advent of texting and instant messaging and things like that, and that the print, that the written word itself is actually probably more ubiquitous and probably more popular than it has been in many, many years.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder myself, like for the longest time, I would think, you know, where are people getting their information? Are they still reading magazines? Are they reading blogs? Are they reading books? Or are they just watching TV? But you're right. I mean, people now are writing and reading every day, just as a form of communication. I guess we've kind of, I mean, this is a much bigger discussion that goes way outside of games and games publications, but you were probably used to for a long time people talking on the telephone a lot more than they really do now. I mean, I'm sure people talk on the telephone all the time, but yeah, I mean, people are texting each other constantly throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Even
if it's just 140 characters, people are probably reading and writing more than they have been in decades.
Oh, and tweeting. Yeah. Twitter and Facebook. I mean, it's all written. And I think that, you know, that is really encouraging for me as someone who's launching something that is meant to be read, that people are keeping their reading skills, honed.
Mm.
So they haven't forgotten how to read.
I have actually expressed a similar sentiment in the past that I think that everybody should use Twitter if for no other reason than to keeping their ability to read and write, sharp.
On top of the monthly issues, are you going to do any kind of daily news coverage on a website anywhere?
Well, no, but it's a good thing that you asked because so one of the main reasons, there were a couple of main reasons that I wanted to do this and why I thought, you know, a new games magazine could be really cool. And why especially something that was made just for like a digital platform, like the iPad and Android tablets could be really cool. I mean, the initial idea was, and this is something I've wanted to do for years ever since, PSM, which for those that don't know, it was a 100% PlayStation focused magazine here in the US. Ever since a few years ago when that kind of went away and everyone had worked on it kind of went their separate ways. Ever since then, you know, everyone that worked on that magazine absolutely loved it. I mean, it was a dream job. We loved putting it together, and people from all indications, the readers loved the magazine. And up to this day, I still get, you know, people that recognize me or talk with me online or just talk about kind of the good old days of games magazines in general. They talk about, hey, I really love PSM. Oh, I wish there was a magazine that was still, you know, around that was still like PSM. And so for the longest time, I thought, hey, that would be pretty rad, start a magazine that's like PSM, or is, you know, takes some of that core like personality and fun and kind of reinfuses that back into games publications. But of course, you know, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to start a print like print based game magazine now.
Sure.
So that, you know, was something, I had an idea about for or desire to do for a long time. Then just a few months ago, you know, I was talking with some of my old comrades from those days and some of them who are still in traditional publishing. And like something that came out of a lot of those discussions we would have was that, you know, like, hey, magazines are really still cool. But, you know, we have these deadlines, we have these production schedules and these lead times that lead to us having, you know, reviews of games out, you know, weeks after these games are on shelves. And they start to think like, you know, hey, what's the point? Like, is there a point in even reviewing games if the reviews are going to be a month old by the time they hit? And so kind of out of that, I came upon the idea of, hey, what if we could do a games magazine where news, but even more importantly, in a lot of cases, reviews could be updated just like whenever you wanted to. And so the idea behind Pixel is that you get a magazine every month, but there's a specific section in the magazine where you'll get a push notification whenever we add new content. So we have the ability through some kind of
voodoo
design MacGyvering, which let me tell you was really easy to figure out, and actually it wasn't, to basically update a section of the magazine where, you know, say our goal right now is at least once a week to have some kind of fleshed out current events or hot topics, if you will, type stories about what's been going on in the previous week. So, you know, at the end of the week, you can kind of get your fix for, you know, what the latest topics are. But also, you know, if you've been waiting for something like SSX to come out, to be able to get a push notification in the morning that says, hey, SSX is out today in stores, and you can read Pixel's review of it in your issue. And you go to the issue and you go to the live section, and there's a little banner, or a little, not a banner, but I kind of picture it as that, but there's a section of a page that has been updated to say, here's some SSX art, and hey, here's a review, tap here, and a little window pops up inside the issue, and you can read it in there. And
I find that really fascinating because obviously being somewhat involved, in writing about games from our standpoint and reading about the news and trying to keep up to date, it can be tough if you're not always on Twitter or you're not always, constantly refreshing your RSS feed. So, from the standpoint of just someone who's, who wants more information about a specific subject or a new game that's coming out, I think getting that push notification is excellent. It's almost like a time saving. Seems like almost like a time saving thing for fans out there. They can, instead of maybe they've kind of gone through the magazine and then they don't know when there's anything new, so they don't, maybe they may not be refreshing it as much, but then they get that push notification.
We live in a world where waiting 2 hours for something is too long to wait.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you can get those reviews out there right away, people will appreciate it, and especially if they're being told that they don't even have to go searching for the content.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The content will come. That's something Josh Topolsky said about they're putting a couple of their big pieces from The Verge onto Newsstand, and he said that content, you shouldn't have to look for content, should come to you. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's really great about this
very
push
true.
Notification.
Yeah. Very true.
That's to me, that's the most interesting thing about Pixel, is the fact that it just comes straight to me in something that I have in my hands all the time.
Yeah, and that's good to hear, because, that's something I thought, all along would be, in addition to just really trying to make a magazine that's, I like to just call it fun, make a magazine that's just kind of irreverent and fun and focused on how cool games can be. Mm-hmm. Versus, it's Pixels, it's not going to be a industry publication. It's not going to be about the inner workings of the industry. It's not going to be about, who's getting laid off from company X. Mm-hmm. It's about, and there's certainly a place for that, but it's really more about, what's really fun about being a gamer and just kind of celebrating more of the kind of the community aspects of it, and just the amazing kind of amount of just kind of like love for games there is out there and the things that come out of that, like spin-offs and comics and what have you. And I think that part of this whole thing is not just merely sending a push notification out when something's available. And we certainly, if this is something that, people are like, hey, this is really cool, we love it, we want more, we're definitely looking at wanting to be able to update the live section of the magazine more and more frequently and really making it more robust and building more functionality in. But at least for the time being, I think an important thing is that we not only, make this something that's not stagnant, that updates on a regular basis, mm-hmm. Not only lets you know that there's something new there, but also curates things so that if it's featured in that section that, it's something interesting. Like, we're not going to send you a push notification, to tell you that there's a pair of Pikachu socks, on sale at Target. Like, that could be really cool, but we have to prioritize things. So I think
now, if they're Malachu socks,
Malachu would be breaking news. But
I would read about that.
But yeah, that's kind of the kind of where we're going with it.
So tell us, tell us a little bit about some of the other content you guys, you're planning. I mean, obviously written is part of it, but, what's the format going to be like? What are some of the other things we can expect from Pixel?
Well, the format itself is very much true to a games magazine a current game magazine, or if you were someone who ever picked up a copy of PSM, the underlying structure of it, is, we have the news is something that, is very much in that live category. but you're going to kind of see a kind of upfront section about our start section, which is about kind of that live stuff, but also current topics that are big, people that are making news in games for you know, for being, you know, like kind of hot right now in terms of the games I've been making. So more interviews, some like longer form interviews, short form interviews. And then a lot of, you know, just since we're doing the news and the reviews on a like kind of a live format, a lot of the content is going to be features, like features focused. So, you know, and just kind of to make kind of make a statement and kind of put out there like who we are and what we're into. For the first issue, we did our unfortunately, you know, the Hollywood thinks that, you know, this time of year isn't too late into 2012 to start saying what was really cool last year. So we've got our first annual awards feature where we picked, you know, our top 10, games of 2011. But then a pretty huge, I think it's like 18 games preview feature of games coming out this year. And then a guide to what's available right now for PlayStation Vita. And then we're also just trying to do a lot of stuff that's kind of around the whole like community and history of gaming. We're gonna have a regular section that's about called Flashback. That's about retro games that came out 10 years ago, the issue month. And we're also kind of doing a lot more, you know, kind of going into, you know, the fun aspect of stuff and the stuff that people liked from PSM is we're doing a lot of like comic book style stuff. So, like for example, I work together with a game concept artist and a character designer this issue. We did a couple of things. We're doing a section where we remix popular or like favorites. So we remix these games into something different. Like this issue, we've got mock cover art for a game that mixes Grand Theft Auto with Total Recall, and it's called it's called Grand Theft Quatto. and so, you know, so some cool, that's another thing that that we really like doing at PSM was like original artwork. So that's some cool original artwork that we have. And also a comic that's Ryu Hayabusa's Very Ninja Day Off, where we follow the hero from Ninja Gaiden on his day off and get to see a little bit of what a ninja master does when he's not killing people. So yeah, just the first issue is actually all told it's 67 pages. And it's actually all ad free, the first issue. And so we actually in going through, we finished it up a couple days ago, and in going through and like the very arduous proofing process, It's a pretty hefty read, so that's always good. You know, so, that you know, you kind of breeze through it in a couple minutes.
You're going to be releasing on newsstand for iPad, and what are you going to be publishing with on Android?
Android. Well, basically, it's Pixel itself is a standalone app.
Okay.
But if you have a iOS device. You know, if you're running a version of iOS new enough that you have newsstand, it's going to live on the newsstand. But if you have an Android device, it's a standalone app with like kind of an in-app store. So, yeah.
Android can be a little bit tough because there's no major newsstand equal.
No, it's just it's so much fragmentation. We're going to be on the just on the Android market. So
yeah,
none of these carrier-specific things or hardware-specific things.
Are you going to try and get it on the Amazon Marketplace too?
Yeah, actually, that we're trying for that, and we're also looking at adapting it for Kindle Fire, but that's probably not going to happen for at least a couple more months, a couple more issues.
Wait until you get running first.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I've had people asking about versions for like smaller devices, for iPhone and iPod Touch, and for, you know,
Vita,
Android handsets, and Vita. And really, the issue facing us with that, and we've obviously looked into it and seen what others have done with kind of their more PDF format. I mean, that's another important thing, is, if I'll take a little hop back for a second, is that one of the things I wanted to make doubly sure of is that this wasn't going to, not that there's anything wrong with doing something that's a static, like a PDF format magazine, but, you know, I figured if we're going to be on these devices that are all touch enabled, you know, we have to make it, you know, interesting and dynamic. So you can read the magazine in portrait mode, which is vertical mode, I guess, or horizontal landscape mode, just as easily. It reorients itself. Also, if you turn, there's little indications on a lot of the pages that if you turn your tablet sideways, you'll get extra like trivia, little blurbs that you would normally see. And also just trying to do a lot of like touch enabled stuff. Like if you've got the Vita feature, if you want to see a zoom in on some of the cooler features, you can touch the screen and get a zoom in on it. Or if you're looking in our previous feature, you'd say, I mean, me as like someone who's really, overly cynical sometimes, I'd probably look at it and say, oh, why is there only one screenshot, you know, on this? I realize there's space constraints, but there's only one screenshot. Well, you tap the screenshot in the layout and it turns into a pop-up like gallery that you can flick through.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. So, you know, cause that really helps us work around, and anyone who's read a comic book on an iPad knows that it's not the same page size. So it's allowed us to design things that are readable on the iPad screen or the Android tablet screen without needing to scale them manually, but still include just as much content. It's just kind of in some inventive ways. But to get back to the idea of doing the magazine on a smaller device, when we looked at it, we saw people that were, you know, releasing PDF versions of their print magazines and also allowing those to be read on the iPhone. And we found that, you know, you can't read them just natively. You have to zoom in on them really close manually. And we just didn't think that was really that great.
Wouldn't be the best experience.
No. And so we're looking at doing some things, and I guess you might even call them spinoffs of Pixel, down the road that are specifically geared towards like smaller devices, like say your iPhone. So sure. Whether it's some sort of special issue that's a guide that you might want to take with you, we'll call it the toilet companion. I don't know. But yeah. So.
Man, this, as somebody who came into this knowing very little about Pixel, right to go off the bat, man, it sounds fascinating. I'm sold on this whole idea, and just from hearing you talk about it, I really
yes!
am.
Yes! I think that's about 5 sales I've secured this week alone. So we're at a good pace to be able to put out issue 2.
There you go.
Well, actually, speaking of which, oh, sorry, go ahead. Deli,
I'll hop in real quick here. So you've kind of mentioned a little bit about what drove you to create it. I mean, what are some of like the difficulties, or I don't want to say difficulties, some of the challenges, I guess, that you guys have faced in creating Pixel? I mean, what were some of the things that you found maybe weren't working or were kind of holding you back?
Well,
if there were such things.
You know, definitely a lot of it was just being able to get some of the stuff we wanted to get working. Like the ability to do pop-up image galleries and pop-up enlargements of things was like only came into the picture maybe 5 days before we were finished. So that required, I'd have to say, a lot of it. A lot of it was trial and error. A lot of, you know, very much, I mean, I kind of joked with some people that, you know, I could be a good test case for, you know, if Apple or anyone wanted to say to people who are doing traditional print publishing, like, okay, here's what's required to make the switch over to digital publishing. simply because, you know, I've gone through so much trial and error with this first issue of just having to reiterate on things to make sure it works right, it makes sense. There's so many things that you start out and you think, okay, you know, nothing could be more simple than just putting out a magazine on something like the iPad. But it turns out if you want to do it in a way that takes any amount of advantage of the hardware, you have to try out some new things. And you have to be able to, you know, put your own unique spin on them. So, you know, there was just a lot of reworking things. There was a lot of, you know, how do you design something that kind of maximizes the much smaller amount of space you have? And a lot of that comes in with, you know, like moving layers of text. You know, there are parts in the first issue where, you know, it looks like the text cuts off at the bottom of the screen, but if you start, you know, flicking the screen, it starts scrolling up. And so that's, you know, that's how you take care of a lot of that. You know, and just generally, like, how do you, you know, what constitutes good design for a games magazine? How do you turn this editorial tone you're going for? How do you turn that into, like, a visual? What's the visual representation of that? So there was just a lot of learning. You know, I'm the editor in chief, but I'm also the art director. So there was a lot of learning to make it, you know, something that someone might look at and say, "Hey, this looks good," versus, you know, just laughter. Like, oh yeah, okay, you may be able to write, buddy, but man, you know, you got to hire a real
designer. What the hell is this shit?
Yeah, I know. And especially, I mean, that's a whole consideration of this was, you know, how do we make something that people are going to feel like good or feel like they've spent 99 cents, and which seems like such a small, like, kind of throwaway amount, but, you know, like, it's the impulse purchase amount, but how do you make them feel like, you know, hey man, that was worth $1 or that was worth $5. And
that was worth coming back next month to spend
that's
another
worth,
bill.
Yeah, or I'm going to subscribe, you know? I mean, that's something that was always a challenge in the world of print. And I think it's even more so in this tablet world because, you know, you have whole games that are either free or only $1. I mean, I have my iPad and my phone are full of games that were $1 and I can't believe they were $1. And you know, I all I can think is, man, I'm going up against these full-fledged games that, you know, granted they're not, you know, magazines and games obviously are different things, but I'm going up against this full gaming experience at the same price. You know, it's like, I guess in a way it'd be kind of like saying it'd be trying to like launch a magazine that costs $60 an issue. Yeah, you know? And it's like, sure, I have to make this just as enjoyable as a game that costs $60. So
makes sense. Yeah. You actually answered my next question, which was going to be how much will it cost?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's 99 cents. And actually, this is another thing. I haven't really talked about the fact that it's monthly. I haven't talked about the fact that initially, we were talking, you know, the first issue was always going to be 99 cents. And we were going to probably charge a little more for subsequent issues. But I think I'm pretty much set on the issue price being 99 cents from here on out.
So we got those hot scoops on this podcast.
Yeah. And we're going to offer a subscription for a year for $9.99. So. Okay. Hopefully that's pretty competitive with, mm-hmm. with what's out there. And I think it's really my hope that having these regular kind of dynamic / live updates will not only, you know, make that a better or more attractive proposition, but also, you know, hopefully encourage a little bit of change in that direction in general from other people that have, like, magazines or paid content.
Well, I mean, that was one of the questions I was going to ask. There's been a lot of shift in the kind of the journalism landscape. I mean, you have like Vox Games popping up. You have a lot of people kind of jumping around job wise. You've kind of explained a little bit of the approach you guys are taking. I mean, how do you kind of see Pixel fitting in with this brave new landscape, I guess? Because you're not only kind of trying something a little bit different with gaming journalism, but just the overall delivery of information is also something that you guys are kind of at the forefront of. I mean, is it kind of overwhelming? Is it frightening at all? Or are you terrified? Do you break out in sweats at nighttime?
Yes. I'm not terrified. I'm really excited about it. I think right now is a very interesting time in the world of writing about games and especially about reading about games. I think everyone has like their core strengths, and I think like where Chris Grant and the McElroys and those guys are going like with Vox Games, I think that and my old buddies at Joystick, they have these really like they have this really awesome set of skills that works really well towards creating this content on such a fast paced schedule and such a these daily schedule and just getting that information out there. And I'm super impressed by what they've done. And I think that where, you know, Pixel and where, you know, maybe other magazines that come along digitally, where they're going to stand out is in the kind of putting together like kind of like this is going to sound kind of out there, but if a games blog is kind of like a show that's on every day, a games magazine that comes out once a month, to me should be kind of like the motion picture. Like it's got to be kind of tailored from beginning to end to be this experience almost it's complete and is you know, at least in the case of Pixel, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do it was to bring a kind of, you know, a very, very distinct personality and a very fun look. Like, I mean, this is something that you could talk about for forever, but just the sense that in a lot of ways, I think talking about games has just gotten to be, you know, way too cynical. And it's something we're actually going to maybe look at a little bit in an upcoming issue of Pixel, is just the idea that, you know, I think we tend to let the let out of our sight the fact that, you know, how much we love games and how fun it can be to play a game when, you know, there's just you know, way too much like cynical talk, like, oh, you know, game X is missing feature Y, and you know dwelling on something like that versus, hey, the game in general was just like really fun. But I think that you know, we want to just kind of bring that that kind of just excitement about games, like, hey, I can't wait to see, you know, what I should get excited about this month. Bring that back, but also that idea of like I was saying, that kind of complete experience, like every month, like, hey, this is, you know, this is the issue of Pixel. It was really fun this month. I laughed a lot. And that's another thing. We want people to laugh a lot, and I hope they do. I think I made a promise to our Kickstarter backers that they'd laugh, that there'd be at least two laughs per issue, which would be pretty good in today's economy. 50 cents per laugh. I think it's a pretty good going rate. So, we just want people to have a lot of fun.
Yeah. You can't put a price on a smile.
Well, we're, like, I mean, we're,
port of here.
Yeah. Well, we're so super excited for the project. you're essentially set to launch, what, any day now, I guess you could
any,
say.
Yeah, we're waiting on Apple's approval process. So
cool.
It could be Friday. Hopefully no later than early next week. Yeah, we're sitting here refreshing constantly.
Well, there's a big day on Wednesday of next week with the iPad 3 announcement. So
yeah, and that's
so expect to be trotted on stage. With
expect
that.
To be on stage. We're expecting you
hey,
there.
Who knows? It just, for me, as excited as I should be, and I really am about an iPad 3 and the idea of a Retina display on an iPad. I gotta say, when you're actually in the process of developing something for current hardware, and you're faced with needing to upscale all your art to look good on a new piece of hardware, I can really see sometimes where developers are coming from. It's given me a profound new appreciation for complaints developers have.
Yes, sure. Maybe makes you rethink all the mean things you said about some games in the past.
Yeah.
Well, here's kind of one more question. How have some of the developers you've talked to, how have they reacted to the to Pixel?
Everyone is super, super excited. Everyone, they obviously want to check out the first issue. But, it's a good thing is that, and I think that I think I've actually gotten some questions along those lines from our backers and just people who are interested in general in Pixel is well, are you guys going to, not only you're starting a new magazine, but, are you guys going to be just kind of outsiders or, what's going on there? And, fortunately from doing this for a really long time, we have a lot of a lot of connections with a lot of developers, and they're all being really supportive. So I think you're going to be surprised by some of the developers you're going to see in the pages of Pixel. Some of the games you'll see in the coming issues will probably be pretty exciting.
Sweet, 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 sweet.
So yeah, long answer short, publishers and developers are really excited because
period.
The stuff I've worked on in the past has been pretty cool. So
awesome,
right? So yeah, it's call coming back to that pedigree.
Well, we're super excited. Again, it's due to launch any day now. Hopefully here soon. And we totally wish you the best. And hopefully we can we'll definitely be keeping our eyes on Pixel. I think I'm going to be a subscriber. If I'm not already, then I will definitely become one.
Yeah.
And
should be
pretty cool. We'll post
absolutely.
We'll post some of the info on the in this podcast post. So. No,
I look forward to sending you an application soon.
Awesome.
He's not kidding either.
He's not kidding. I think you say that to every guest we have on the podcast.
Pretty much.
It was strange when we had that SeaWorld trainer on.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, Randy, again, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Awesome.
Thanks for taking
Anytime.
Some time out. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back. Maybe once you guys launch and you get some good feedback, that'd be cool to check in with you.
Yeah, we can talk about what we're going to do next.
Sounds good. Where can we find you?
Right now you can find us Twitter @ PixelMag, PXLMAG. And you can get linked up to all the other relevant stuff we've got going on, including our forums at www.pixelmag.com. And yeah, you can also just, find me walking around.
aimlessly.
And it's going to be at GDC next week. I'm going to be there with the first issue installed on a couple iPads to check out. So
cool.
Yeah, just look for the guy waving iPads around that have
iPads for everybody. iPads
exactly.
For everybody. Free iPads.
That'd be a bad idea. Okay.
That would definitely
excellent.
Get some notice.
Yeah. I'll be like one of those Nintendo demo persons. people that has the hardware tethered to their belt. I'll just rope around and tie it to my belt.
Well, we hope you're as attractive as those Nintendo people were at E3.
I was just about to say, maybe if you wore a bikini.
I will be wearing the same outfits as them. I can't promise I will look that good in them. So I'll get some attention no matter what.
Sweet. You might be escorted out of GDC at some point.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, escorted out.
Escorted out. Oh, goodness.
Any publicity is good publicity, right?
Any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
Before we sign off, I have a code for an iOS game. I have more Pocket Ninja codes, everybody. Pocket Ninjas. Here's a code if you have an iOS app or a device. Punch in now. Maybe not the
you
app.
Will have an iOS app after
you will have an app after this.
If you're looking for an iOS app, we have one.
Guys, it's late. I'm old and I'm tired. The combination of numbers and letters are P4RLKFENTPRT. Once again, P4R.
Oh, come on. If they can't figure it out the first time around, they're screwed.
P4RLKFENTPRT.
The rewind button.
Leave a comment in the post here.
They have to flip their tape over.
Yes. And Eric, where can we find you?
You can find me all over the place.
Damn it. That is scary.
Although I am on a diet, so you'll find me in fewer places.
What's your Twitter handle? What's your Twitter handle?
I am at LMM. That's two L's and M at the end.
Steven?
I am Steven Strom, STEVENSTROM on Twitter.
I am Deli Domofsky at CoolRats on Twitter. And you can find us at sidequesting.com, which I hope is how you found out about this podcast. And again, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Randy. And wishing Pixel the best. And we will see everybody on the next episode of The Side Quest. Steven?
Bye.
Beautiful.